Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
Let's do something crazy.
Wake up with Toucher and Rich.
Oh boy, that's dumb.
Just tell your smart speaker to play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What?
Early. It's a good one. This is five.
Oh, I know this.
I've heard this too. Yeah,
it's a good song.
Yeah.
Did you know the dance moves to this one?
No. The song's good.
A lot of times they're romanticizing teen sex.
Yeah, and it was usually written by like a 39-year-old man, which.
You're saying five didn't do their own thing?
I don't know. Again, they were British. There was a whole run on British boy bands that I'm not as familiar with in terms of, you know, the production and everything.
You kept it good right there in the US of A?
Well, O-Town, as you might know, had a song called Liquid Dreams. And if you read through that one, not cool at all.
Not their best song, though.
Well, I'm just thinking of, like, it was probably written by Ron Perlman and probably just in a really bad... It's not something you want to read. Very uncomfortable.
What is Liquid Dreams about?
What do you think it's about, Fred?
When you sleep a nocturnal emission?
Yep.
Interesting.
Is that really what it's about?
It is. It's bad. It's really...
singing about how they have nocturnal emissions?
Yeah. But I mean, they like, you know, guss it up a little bit to maybe provide some intrigue, but we all know what's going on. I'm not going to read the lyrics,
thing is like, I don't get laid. Here I am in bed. Have you ever had a nocturnal emission?
No.
Neither have I.
I think they're a myth.
So do I. Johnny Wall game?
Yes.
You have?
I have. Back when I was younger, yes. And I'm looking over the Liquid Dreams lyrics here.
You did. So what was it? You abstained from everything for a while?
It freaked me out, if I remember correctly. It happening the first time.
No, did you? The first time?
I think it happened twice. For me.
Were you abstaining from everything? You were abstaining from self-pleasure? You were abstaining from everything?
No, it wasn't that at all. It's weird.
Had you kicked ass that day in the marching band?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
And your dreams started to go
led
crazy?
That line around the field in precise fashion at halftime. Yes.
Your body was telling you that it's time to get the good stuff.
It's time to get going.
No, you had to have been like 14 or something.
Sounds about right. I don't remember the exact age, but sounds about right.
Yeah, I've never had a nocturnal emission. Were you dreaming about something in particular?
No.
All right.
No. And I got to say that you have stuck the landing, sir. Those lyrics are a little...
Very, very
a little,
bad.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. Four people wrote that song, so...
Four guys got together, and they're like... Nocturnal emissions.
How about that?
Emissions, I should say. Mike, go ahead.
What up? Hey, Hurley, don't feel so bad, man. I used to do all those dance moves in a kangaroo costume at a skating rink.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yes.
Oh, man. You guys are keeping me up, man. I'm on the way back from Georgia. I was down in Atlanta, down at Toucher and Rich's old home.
There you go.
Take it.
Thank you. Yeah, I was at one point when I was a kid, I went to a place called Tally Hall that was like a big food court.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on a stage with another friend of mine breakdancing.
Oh, yeah?
There was only one problem with it.
You didn't know how to breakdance?
Yes. And there is videos out there of it that I can't find. Because, I mean...
Like a tape?
When I say I couldn't breakdance, there was a lot of footwork, as we called it. Where it would be anticipatory, you would anticipate something was going to happen. A lot of knee spins, a lot of bad worms.
So probably something you had seen on the TV quite a few times and never actually practiced until you were under the bright lights.
Yeah, we put on Jam on It by Nucleus.
Watch the movie Breakin' and away you went.
Hey, oh, yeah.
Speaking of which, Fred, and I don't want to completely derail the conversation, but I was listening the other day must have been Monday, Tuesday.
Sure.
And you were getting bullied a little bit by Rob Hardy Poole, who I love, don't get me wrong.
About
your participation in a circle pit, and you were kind of taking it, and I didn't like it.
Well, what am I going to do? I mean,
I think you're allowed to do whatever you want at a rock and roll show.
Well, Dickie Barrett has reached out about it. The singer from the Pie Tasters has reached out about it.
It just seemed like he was getting you down in the dumps a little bit. You were sort of piling on Freddie T, and I didn't. You should have fought back.
Fought back by saying what?
I can do what I want, damn it.
Huh?
You could say I can do what I want when the rock and roll band is on the stage.
Yeah, but I mean, when I looked at the video, first of all, I'm 5 times taller than everyone in there, and second of all, I probably got about 50 pounds on everyone in there.
The only thing that worked against you is that it was like a very, very sort of like hippie circle pit. Like there was nothing really going on. But that's not your fault. If you started shoving people, it would have probably been worse.
Well, I thought that eventually the song was going to start speeding up.
It was just a little too mellow.
Because I saw the guys that knew all the songs, and that's when the pit started. And then it never got to that point in the song. It was a song I was unfamiliar with. But I decided that I was going to go, and I was disappointed when nothing happened about it.
You never really know when you step in.
That's, you know, and that's part of the mystery.
But don't let it stop you.
Well,
you said that might have been your last time?
Well, not for any reasons that Hardy put up, but I mean, when was the last time you were at a show?
I go to a lot of shows, and I go right up front still.
You do?
And I get sore.
You go right up front?
I actually, for the first time, it was last fall, I saw Against Me at the Paradise, which is like the size of this room, and the next day I couldn't hear. Like I could not hear. It was just like this, and I was like, oh, it finally happened. But it came back.
So you get,
came back.
You get right up in front?
Yeah, it's...
With the girls?
No. I mean, it's...
So you have a safe distance between you and the pit because you're right up front.
The pit's usually behind me.
Right.
But sometimes if you need to get to the front, you got to go right through that pit.
Mm-hmm. Does Against Me have a very active pit?
I wouldn't know because I'm usually right up against the front.
All right. Well, you got to be there. Do you sing along?
Oh, yeah. Screaming.
It's
an outlet, you know?
Yeah, you're definitely like an emo kid.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot of feelings.
Now I know that you are the oldest kid. Oldest guy singing along.
Sometimes. It happened pretty quick. You're like in college and it's still fine, and then you're a couple years out of college, and then it's just like, you're the old guy.
But there's you instinctively want to go into the pit because it's what you've done in your every time you saw a show for many, many years.
I mean, maybe you can relate. You start to feel a song, you know? It's like in your sternum.
Yes.
And you can't stand in the back with your hands in your pockets, you know? You gotta feel it. You gotta get in there. You gotta experience it.
For me, it's an instinctual thing. Like you go, all right, here's the pit, and then you get out of it, and you're exhausted because you can only handle one song.
Yeah, it gets a little. I mean, it's I'm not as strong as I used to be, but.
Well, I mean, do you put a mouth guard in and really take some shots at people?
No, I never liked that when the elbows flying and the kids wiling out. I never enjoyed those people.
All right. Well, listen. We talked to. This guy, his name is Mark Leibovich. He was a political writer. He then started covering the NFL with a book called Big Game. He talked to almost all the owners. He talked to a ton of players, including Patriots players. And here is what he had to say about Trump, because he'd been covering Trump, and now all of a sudden these things, these worlds collided. Here he is on Trump and the owners.
Last year, it's just, you know, Trump starts attacking the league, and the owners are just flipping out. They are just obsessed with this guy, and they're. I got a sort of a secret tape recording of a meeting between owners and a bunch of players last year during the height of the anthem crisis, and just hearing these owners talk. I mean, Terry Pegula of the Bills, just like, what are we going to do to, you know, Donald can't weigh in again. Like, what's he going to do next to us? And, Robert Kraft was pretty, pretty outspoken against Trump, which is different from his public perception or his public posture with Trump. So you do get a sense just from talking to them privately and hearing them talk when they, just when they're sort of someone on or offline, that they are very, very nervous about what he can do next. And it's got to be pretty satisfying for the president, given that he's wanted into this club for 4 decades. And now, he might not exist in the club, but he exists in their heads.
Now, Robert Kraft, is, as you mentioned, has kind of had a complicated relationship with Trump. One thing that I thought was very interesting is that He was the one who put the America, Make America Great Again hat in Brady's locker. But can you kind of talk about the evolution of his relationship and how that has all panned out?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I mean, Trump and Kraft, I mean, they have known each other for years. I mean, they're sort of in this really rich guys club, and but they both like fame. They like both being around famous people, and they both like attention. So there is sort of a natural affinity there. And look, I don't pretend to know how people on this level of public life interact, but like, they've been photographed together for years. They had a bit of a falling out when Trump didn't get the Buffalo Bills in 2014. He thought Robert was going to help him. So Trump kind of held a grudge for a while. They kind of had a, they got back together when Trump was the Republican nominee for president in 2016, and that all started again. So I don't know. I mean, I think in public, they do sort of both enjoy being seen with each other, being photographed together. You know, Trump spent a good part of the campaign dropping Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft's name all over the country. And there's actually a scene in the book where Trump does this like in Maryland, like right before the Maryland primary or something. And the crowd boos because obviously it's filled with Ravens fans. And I couldn't help myself. I just sort of took that clip and I sent it to Tom because, you know, we email sometimes. My little headline was, I had to read the crowd there, Donald. And he just emailed back saying, that's funny. That just made my day. But no, look, it's really, I don't pretend to understand how these relationships work. But certainly with Robert, it can be very different in public versus what you hear in private.
The best thing about that is that Kraft, if you believe the whole story, is that Kraft put that Make America Great Again hat in Brady's locker, and then Brady caught a lot of crap for it.
Well, Brady said that at the time.
Yeah.
He said RKK put that in there.
Yeah, so wouldn't that piss you off?
If you ended up, you know, having to answer all these questions for years?
Like, yeah, it became like a big news story.
And now everyone just, like, you know, pins it together, well, Brady in the hat.
Brady, who obviously wants nothing to do with any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
That he's positioned as, in a very contentious political environment, he's positioned as, you know, supporting someone. Because even if he puts something like F. Trump in his locker, he's going to get a bunch of stuff.
Right. So, right. And well, at the time, too, I mean, it was early. It was when there were like 8 Republican candidates to earn the nomination. It wasn't as if it was, you know, Trump and Hillary at that point.
Right.
It was like, so, oh, Donald Trump's running for president. Look at that. Here's a hat.
But it wasn't portrayed like that in the media.
No. But I'm saying over time, once he became the established candidate, it was sort of cemented in, like Brady Trump. Whereas at the time, he was like, oh, yeah, it'd be funny if you put a putting green in the White House lawn. Like, that was the level of seriousness that it was handled with, and then it became, obviously, its own thing.
Yeah, I just don't... If I'm Brady, and he keeps everything so private and, you know, only wants to talk about, you know, TB12...
Thanks for the hat, Bob.
Yeah, I'd just be like, what the hell are you doing? You're putting me in this bad position. All right, the Patriots play a very important game tonight.
It's on WBZ Channel 4, by the way.
Right, well, it's
also
right here
on this radio station, you see.
With yes. WBZ TV's Dan Roach. Look at that.
Yeah, well, you know what?
It's high fives all around.
I'm sure that they're glad that that's in prime time. So what's going to happen is we're going to talk to Phil Perry and find out if there's anything at all to watch about during the game tonight.
You're listening to Toucher and Rich, the Sports Hub.
Yeah. We sending this one out to all the ladies all over the world.
All the ladies all over the
all
world.
All my sexy mamas. Come on, come on, come on.
As now. We proceed to give you what you need. You know, yeah. I like it when your body go bum, bum, bum.
Bad boy, B2K. Yo, oh, talk to him, player.
Talk to him.
I like your little sexy style. Love it when you're getting wild.
I see you.
Girl in the club with me.
Come over here, let me talk to you for a
minute. Is this too,
tell you something.
Like soulful for you?
This was B2K? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
What?
What?
B2K?
You gotta be kidding.
They were a little bit more of like a throwback to like
Keith Sweat,
90s R&B.
Yeah, like Keith Sweat and what have you.
Yeah.
When were these guys hot?
Same time. I mean, let's be real.
They're all
98 to 01, I gotta
now,
say.
Did you picture yourself...
I don't think they had that long of a run, but somewhere in that window.
Did you picture yourself like seducing girls to these songs?
No. No. To boy band songs?
album.
Yeah, like this is like a song that, like, did you ever have like this thing where you were going to turn on the lights and get loose?
No, I don't think I listened to much B2K, to be honest with you.
Well, because I...
Bump.
My sophomore year in high school, I made the decision that I was going to make my basement a sex pit. Mm-hmm. So that my parents managed to furnish half of it, and the rest was storage. So I bought a black light and one of those things from Spencer's Gifts that spins around with the different lights. Mm-hmm. And we would play like Shaq.
Seems like a slam dunk.
And we would, oh boy. And then I bought a fish because to like relax the women.
They smell good too. You know, a nice fish tank in the basement.
And then I had in the storage room a mattress on the floor. So the idea was I would bring the girls down and seduce them with the fish and the various Spencer's Gifts lights.
Right.
And then I would lay them down under the theme of the album Shaft.
I mean, it's kind of a put off right now that you're bragging so much about such a successful endeavor that you went into. I mean, it's kind of uncouth.
I got laid. Never. Never. Hey, honey, you want to go in this room with all these boxes and crap and bang on this mattress on the floor?
Guy who didn't need to work that hard, Phil Perry. Guy from Machine loves Phil Perry.
Yep, it's true.
Handsome dreamboat, Phil Perry.
Football player. Works out every morning.
Phil Perry, did you hear the guy from Machine talk about you?
I did. I was very flattered.
Yeah, you should be. He's a
nice guy.
Well, the great thing about the gay community is that there's room for everyone. He looked at you as a football player, but even me, who's not considered attractive by anyone, he likes the way I look because he says I'm a double rugged bear. So for some reason, I could walk into Machine and maybe strike up a conversation with some people based on my looks, being a double rugged bear, you know?
I can see that. There are different tastes for everybody. And it seems like the guy from Machine maybe just has a good idea of what all those tastes are at the same time.
I just think that he's an equal opportunity lover. Mm-hmm. I just think that he's...
There you go.
You know,
for the most part, there are some some exceptions.
Well, he found Haggerty disgusting. But Phil Perry, who works at NBC Sports Boston along with Joe Haggerty, he covers the Patriots. Now, the game tonight, which we heard here on 98.5 The Sports Hub, and over where Hurley works on the television.
Yep.
Now, you know, people generally don't like this game. You don't see any... some, if not any, of the starters. Are there positional battles? Are there people that are going to be on the field tonight playing for jobs that we'll remember in the regular season? There'll be factors in the regular season.
You know what? It's there will be guys that play tonight that will be on the team and that will be factors in the regular season. Julian Edelman is one of them. That one's obvious, given his situation. But I went back, looked at last year. There were five players that ended up making the 53-man roster that were not Steven Duskowski or Ryan Allen or Joe Cardona. And a handful of them had significant roles. Deion Lewis saw a little bit of time last year's fourth preseason game. Adrian Waddle, who started a bunch of games at right tackle, played about 20 snaps in last year's preseason game. By and large, anybody that plays tonight, the odds of you making the team aren't great. Jacob Hollister was another guy last year, played a bunch, fourth preseason game. Ended up playing a good amount last year as a rookie. For the most part, if you're hoping to make the roster, you're hoping not to play tonight, I would say. But there will be a handful of guys that end up on the 53, even though they play tonight. So don't watch tonight and say, well, if he's on the field, there's no shot. There will be a couple guys that end up making an impact.
All right, do you think Jason McCourty will play? And if he does, what does that speak for his future with the team?
I think he will, and he's sort of the exception to me. If you're a guy of his stature, if you're 30 plus years old and you're playing in this game, it might not be the best thing for your chances in terms of making the roster. But given what they tried to do last week, trying him at a new position, it seemed like that was a fairly late decision that they were going to do something like this. It sounds like basically the week of practice leading up to last week's game, they said, let's try this thing out, see how it works. And then they gave him a bunch of snaps in the game itself. I think if they really are seriously considering him as potentially part of the safety depth chart, that they'd have to give him a little bit more than what he got against the Panthers. So that's a guy where he's obviously had a long career.
But if you see him out there tonight, I wouldn't necessarily say that's the worst thing in the world, because if that's safety, I think they're trying to get a real legitimate look at the guy, and it may either benefit him or it may be a detriment to one of the other players on the depth chart at safety. Maybe somebody like Jordan Richards all of a sudden, even though I think he's safe, he has such a significant special teams role, I don't think he's going anywhere. But maybe somebody like that, his job is all of a sudden in jeopardy because McCourty now counts as part of the safety group.
All right, this might sound like an idiotic question, and that will be nothing new for me. But if Jason McCourty gets cut, how does that affect Devin McCourty?
Wait, hold on. Hold on, because that's not an idiotic question, because that was going to be my question. So,
hell yeah, Hurley!
That's genius.
Woo! How will that affect Devin McCourty? Obviously, he's not going to, you know, mope on the field. But, you know, if someone gets your twin brother and removes him from your situation, how do you think he'll handle that?
It's a great question. I don't know. I don't even know if Devin would know how he would react in that situation. I think, Devin, both of these guys, they're obviously professionals. I think, you know, even Jason knows he's much closer to the end than he is the beginning, and he's gone about his business in such a way this entire summer where he's been helping a lot of these younger guys that may potentially take his job. But he knows that. And yet he's helped them anyway because he feels as though he owes it to them. He got a lot of help when he was a younger guy. He was a lower round pick. He was a sixth rounder coming out of Rutgers the year before Devin did. And he feels like, hey, this is just what a good veteran should do, even though it may impact his ability to make money playing football this year. So would Devin be so emotionally affected that it would impact him in the locker room or on the field? That I would say no to, but I don't think you could help but be a little bit emotional if your twin brother, a guy that you really had hoped to play with for a long time and that the Patriots had tried to link you up with for the last couple of years in different ways, for that to be a possibility and then maybe to at the end of camp get cut, I think that would be a little bit emotional for Devin for sure.
Phil, do Marcus Cannon and Sony Michel play tonight, or do they play in week one?
I would be surprised if either played tonight. I would say Michel in particular, just because from what little portion of the practice we've seen, he has been limited. He's clearly been limited. Ivan Fears, the running backs coach, even the other day admitted that he's still limited. So that I would be totally shocked to see Sony Michel out there at all. Marcus Cannon, maybe not as much, but I would still be a little bit surprised if we saw either. And with Cannon, I think it's hard to say in terms of availability for week one, but I would say for Michelle, for sure, he's a rookie. He's playing a complicated position in a complicated offense. I know he played in a pro style at Georgia, and he's this polished pass protector. It's one of the reasons he went in the first round, but there's just so much time that he's missed. He missed almost a month of training camp practice of his rookie year. I would say it would be next to impossible for him to be trusted week one to play any sort of significant snaps.
Phil, this is someone you might have mentioned in your first answer, but honestly, that was so long ago, I can't really recall. But Devin Lucien is a guy who I feel like, I mean, the receivers get a lot of talk this summer. Everyone's down on them. But whenever it's a Patriots receiver, we talk about familiarity sort of more than talent. This is a guy who knows the system. Do you think he plays tonight? And do you think that's someone that ends up having an impact on this team this year?
I think he definitely plays. I am not feeling real great about his chances of making an impact on this team. And the only reason I say that is because even though he does have that experience in the system early, even though he spent a significant amount of time here, he's been on a half a dozen other practice squads. He's bounced around the league. And it's a credit to him that he's still hanging on. But I would say for somebody with that kind of experience, with the Patriots depth chart being what it is, for him not to stand out any more than he stood out to this point, either in practices or in these preseason games, is not a great sign for him. So that's not a player I would necessarily look at and say, okay, maybe this is a guy who can end up contributing and be, you know, sort of that fourth receiver for the first 4 weeks of the regular season with Julian Edelman out. I would say maybe Riley McCarron. If any of these back of the depth chart receivers have a shot at making the team, I think Riley McCarron would be my best bet. And it's mostly because he's able to catch punts and return punts. And with Edelman out, you could give it to Patrick Chung. You could give it to Chris Hogan. These are guys that have returned punts in the past, but I'm not sure you want to necessarily risk either of those guys back there. So Riley McCarron may end up getting a roster spot just so he can take on that role.
Phil, now that we're kind of on the doorstep of the regular season, what is the offense going to look like week one against Houston a week from Sunday? Is Philip Dorsett really going to line up as the number two receiver for the first 4 weeks, or are we going to see a fleet of running backs in slots? How is this offense going to work without Edelman out there?
I think you'll see both. Barring a trade of any sort of significance where they bring in a big-time receiver, and I know Zoe floated Golden Tate's name yesterday.
If they're able
to do something like that, that changes everything.
Not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, they were 9-7 last year. Why the hell would they trade Golden
not
gonna Tate?
Not going to happen, and wide receivers that come into this offense never have an impact right away. Never.
I would tend to agree with both of you on that. If you're bringing on anybody at this point in time and he has little to no experience in your offense, the odds of him contributing when you need him most, which is the first month of the season, are very, very slim. However, barring a move like that, we could bring up any number of names, I would say Philip Dorsett is definitely your number two. He is far and away your best route runner, your most dependable guy outside of Chris Hogan that's available to you. Then it's Cordarrelle Patterson, and we kind of know what he is. He is sort of a gadget guy. I know people kind of recoil when they hear that, but that's what he's been for his career. That's what he has kind of looked like to me in the preseason thus far, especially in the snaps he's gotten with Tom Brady. Get it to him in screens, get it to him on some short, some shallow crosses, trying to get him in space, get him with a bunch of momentum and see what he can do after the catch. So Philip Dorsett's your number two. Then I have to get comfortable with that. And I do think the running backs will play a significant role, but the problem you run into if you're the Patriots is that that's not a really deep spot right now either, in terms of especially your pass catching running backs. You have James White, who's great. You can line him up wherever you want, backfield, slot, out wide if you need to. But after that, Rex Burkhead's been dealing with injury for a long time. We haven't seen him in the preseason. We just talked about Sony Michel. Those are supposed to be your other two pass-catching backs, and we don't know how available either of those guys are going to be. And then we know you have Rob Gronkowski, but the tight end depth chart, which you would be relying on as well with these receivers down, that's a group that's got some issues as well. Dwayne Allen's been banged up at different points in camp. Jacob Hollister was dealing with an injury last week that kept him out of that dress rehearsal, quote-unquote, preseason game. So I would say any other year, especially last year, I thought they were pretty lucky in terms of their health. They either had Rex Burkhead or Deion Lewis or James White or all three at different points in the season. Right now, I think you've got more question marks in terms of your depth at other positions outside of receiver, and it just makes how they fill in the gaps a little bit more complicated.
Well, congratulations, Phil. You've made tonight's game at least somewhat compelling. So
there you go.
Good job. You've done yeoman's work. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy yourself tonight.
All right, fellas. Thanks for having me. Talk soon.
All right, Phil. Appreciate it. Hurley came in all full of pee and vinegar. He's got some article out he wants to talk about. We will have that, but first the headlines.
Toucher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Color me bad, John Wallach. 90210 show, Color Me Bad. What happened?
There was a concert, a Color Me Bad concert, and then they were staying, and I guess it was the Wilshire. And most of the episode was Kelly, Donna, and David were trying to find Color Me Bad in the hotel. And only Kelly found them, and it was by complete mistake. But that wasn't the main part of the episode. The main part of that 90210 episode was that Donna caught her mother cheating on her father with another doctor. And that was the whole thing, because Donna thought she led this prim and proper life with prim and proper parents, and she caught her mother walking out of a hotel room and kissing this guy who was not her father on the way out. It was a huge problem.
So the Color Me Bad stuff was kind of comic relief.
Yeah.
When they're dealing with a very serious
matter. And then they all came to the Peach Pit, and there was this really awkward thing. Don't you have to sing for your lunch? And they had to sing, I Adore Mia Moore at the end of the episode.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How many times would you say these episodes you've seen? Like that episode, how many times have you seen it? And when was the last time you saw it?
Last time I saw it was Oh, it's been at least 10 years.
And how many times each episode?
Two, three.
John just, you know, concentrates during them.
I have this retention for this show.
Like, I've watched shows like, say, yeah. like Breaking Bad, where it's like, sit down, like, no phone, no anything. Like, all yep. I've seen each episode at least once, usually twice, and I forget everything.
Yeah, but that's not a classic show.
It was pretty good.
I mean, 90210, it gets you in another True. Place of mind.
I probably remember more, like, Fresh Prince episodes than I remember Fresh Breaking
Prince. All right, so now you kind of feel in the way I'm going. Okay.
Fresh Prince, one
but
of
those
the worst
those were on
shows,
every single day, you know?
One of the worst shows in the history of television.
You think so? You don't like Uncle Phil?
No.
Big Uncle Phil fan.
I don't like...
You like Carlton? Jeffrey, though.
Everybody likes Carlton. Come on.
Well, Jeffrey was just like, ah.
Jeffrey was on point.
Yeah. Well, if anything was on point... All right, Hurley, you've written you wrote several articles over there on CBS Boston. What is this new one you're fired up about?
I got to thinking this week, starting to think ahead to the season, and I don't know about you, but one of the most fun seasons to follow here, in my opinion, was the 2008 season.
Yeah,
because you never knew week to week what was going to happen. It wasn't just I thought 07 at a certain point got a little bit boring because it was like, oh, they're winning 56-7 again. That's fantastic. Whereas 08, every week was sort of, there's a lot of intrigue and there's a lot of excitement. You get to thinking about this year with all the questions you have about the Patriots roster. And I think this year has the potential to be really week to week, very exciting. Like, it's not going to be one of those years where the Patriots just show up to the field and go 12-4. Like, there's going to be a lot of challenges there. So I sort of went through the schedule and picked out some of the more games that, I don't want to say coin flip, but games that aren't going to be cakewalks for the Patriots. And there's 10 of them.
Well, I think the first two games... I don't like them in the first two games.
No, well, you look at Houston last year. Granted, what happened last year doesn't necessarily mean anything for what's going to happen this year, but Deshaun Watson was outstanding. The Texans led by 5 points in the fourth quarter. They took a 5-point lead with 2:28 to play. And, you know, Brandon Cooks caught the game-winning touchdown, did sort of bobble it as he hit the ground, but we don't need to get into that. But that was, you know, the Texans' probably best performance against the Patriots in a long time, outside of week 17 in 09 when Welker got hurt. It was sort of, you know, the Texans weren't the punching bag that they had been. So I think that game is a tough one to start. And I think week two is a lot harder, too, because you're
on the road against a team that gave you problems in the playoffs.
A team that
should have won in that game.
A team that would have absolutely beaten you had Miles Jack not been ruled down on the Deion Lewis fumble recovery. Because
right.
he was off to the races. They would have been up by 17, I think, at that point. And that was a game where in an 8-minute span, Danny Amendola caught five passes for 57 yards and two touchdowns. Do you know how many touchdowns Danny Amendola had all year?
I don't know.
Two. So in an 8-minute span, he equaled his regular season total. If you don't have that otherworldly performance from Danny Amendola, that's a game you lose. And I think people sort of brush past that because we get caught up in the Super Bowl and Malcolm Butler and all that. But that was a game that, you know, was as close to losing as you can get. Now you got to go down there, and you don't have Amendola, obviously, and you don't have Edelman, a defense that ranks second in interceptions, second in sacks, second in passing yards, second in total yards. That's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, and then at the Lions is not a gimme. I mean, I probably right. like them in that game.
Probably, but Patricia, you figure, knows a few ways to attack an offense, a Patriots offense that's a little shorthanded.
Yeah.
You know, a turnover could, you know, these things aren't easy.
Right, and then, so you're lucky to go 2-2, I think. You're going to beat the Dolphins.
You should, but remember the last time the Patriots played the Dolphins, it was their worst game of the year.
But that was in Miami. They never win in Miami.
And they're a mess. I mean, the Dolphins are a complete train.
No, that's a
Jay
win.
Jay Cutler tore them up last year, so you can't take that for granted.
In Miami, everything changes. Patriots have had 14-2 seasons where they've gone to Miami and lost.
Well, that was actually later in the year. I put that game in, too, because in the 8 years the Patriots have gone to the Super Bowl, they're 4-4 in Miami.
Yeah, no, the first game at the end of September against Miami is a win, and an easy win.
All right, so do you think that they'll get a bye, the Patriots, this year?
I mean, I haven't looked through maybe the Steelers' schedule with such a clear eye, but I think it's going to be the Steelers and Patriots again, I feel. I mean, there's always the risk of, you know, Kansas City having a good year or something like that. But to me, they should still be there, but I feel like it's not nearly a given. If they went 10-6, I wouldn't be shocked at all.
Yeah, this is a year that they seemed completely a mess on offense and that, yeah, I mean, there's teams, they have a very difficult schedule.
And you got Kansas City coming in. We saw what they did with Alex Smith at quarterback. I would think Mahomes, who can actually throw a deep ball, might be a little bit more dangerous.
Mahomes is a vast upgrade.
Right.
Over Alex Smith.
And then you get Green Bay coming in on a Sunday night, only the second Brady Rodgers game ever, which I think the league is I know they have their scheduling situation, but they gotta fix that.
Right.
But that's no gimme. The Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2014. They lost in Green Bay that year. And I think at Tennessee is sneaky a tough one. I think Tennessee might be the most improved team in the AFC.
Right.
You got a couple, underriding factors with Butler and Deion Lewis wanting to get a win. I think that team, Rabel's probably going to want to – that's going to be a big measuring stick for the Titans. It's basically going to be their midseason Super Bowl, and it's in Tennessee. So that one's not going to be easy either. And then Minnesota, with that defense coming in, that's no gimme. I think they upgraded a quarter. I'm not a huge Kirk Cousins guy, but he's a lot better than Case Keenum.
Sure.
And I threw, at Miami in there, which I already mentioned. And then you got to go to Pittsburgh in week 15 again, which last year, if Jesse James just held on to the ball, that's a loss.
Well, that's Jesse another thing. Held on to the ball.
He dropped it.
It was a touchdown.
He didn't catch the ball.
That was a touchdown.
That was a touchdown. I'm a Patriots fan.
That was a very simple thing. We don't need to unearth that thing. It was a very simple thing. It was a simple thing. I saw it in live motion. I said he didn't catch it. And then lo and behold, he didn't catch it. It was very simple.
That's a touchdown.
Yeah, that's going to cause a lot of problems. We can get into
that. I know. I mean, if dogs and cats living together.
No. Picture that at the 50-yard line. You go up in the air, you catch it, you reach out, someone knocks it out. Is that a fumble? Is it an incompletion?
Okay,
it's going to be just as much of a mess.
Did you complete the catch?
It was very simple before.
The problem is that once you cross the goal line, then that
But you haven't completed catching it yet. You're still in the air. It doesn't matter what you could do gymnastics up in the air. If say he gets hit in the air and he hasn't even come down yet and the ball gets knocked out, that's a fumble now.
Okay, say that I'm a running back or say I'm a quarterback. And I jump over the offensive line and
you have possession of the ball.
Yeah,
you
Jesse
have possession.
James had the ball in his hand.
He was up in the air. He was in the air.
What does it matter if
he's
in the air?
You have to land. Well, you can't jump out of bounds and catch a ball. You got to get your feet in bounds. You have to possess the ball before you cross a boundary.
But once, okay, if I go and
this is what I wanted to do.
If I jump out, well, I'm sorry that we're not following you.
No, I know, but this we could do this for 9 hours.
Okay, well, we're not going to.
Good.
To make you feel better. If I go and reach the ball over the goal line and go out of bounds, that's a touchdown.
While you're possessing it.
Jesse James had the ball
in
his
hands. He didn't catch it. He hit the ground and dropped it.
After he crossed the goal line.
When he hit the ground. It's one motion. It's one function where you go up to catch a ball. You have to come down with it. It's pretty simple. I never understood why that became such a controversy.
Right.
Just catch the ball, Jesse.
All right.
Anyways, that is a game that theoretically should be tough. I'm not going to sit here and analyze a game that's 3 months from now. We don't even know who's going to be playing and who's not going to be playing. But I think going to Pittsburgh that late in the season could be another scenario like that. And I think that play we just discussed shows you how thin the margin is between winning and losing when you have two conference titans like that.
Right. And so you think that there's a chance they could go 10-6. And 10-6 probably doesn't get you a bye.
Well, the way I put it is this is 10 games. They could go 5-5 in these games. They could go 9-1. But nothing in between would really surprise me. Would you?
How bad is this Patriots team? Or compare this Patriots team to the lesser Patriots teams of the past since Brady's been here.
I mean, receiving core wise, it's not as bad as 13,
right.
Row 6.
Yeah.
So I mean, Rob Gronkowski, provided he's healthy, is still probably the most dynamic threat among the most dynamic threats you could ever have in an offense. Edelman, I think, has looked good. I had some questions about a 32-year-old coming off a torn knee.
Don't worry, he's got stuff to take care of.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah, but he's looked like himself to a certain degree. I don't think he'll ever be as good as he was, 28, 29, 30, but he looks like he's going to be very good. So I think, Hogan had a pretty good year last year. I think it's not as bad as it's being,
There's just not a lot of depth.
Well, and I think at linebacker, too, you're sort of all your eggs are in Dante Hightower's basket. If that goes out again, I feel like you're looking at last year again. It doesn't seem like the defense took steps forward. It seems like they're where they are. They can be better, but one injury to the linebacker, even like if Kyle Van Noy goes out, that's going to be a huge loss. So I feel like there's not a lot of depth at multiple positions. And I feel like last year, in previous years, they've been really fortunate with their safety health, with McCourty, Harmon, and Chung. Those guys have been so reliable. You lose one of those guys, I think the defense is in a lot of trouble. So I feel like, the starters are fine. They're a very good team. They should be one of the top teams in the AFC. But it's not hard to envision scenarios where things go a little bit sideways. And I think from an entertainment standpoint, it should be every
better.
Single week is going to be a lot of intrigue.
Last time they only won 10 games was 2009.
Okay. Well, I mean, I agree with Hurley. I just think that every game is going to be kind of a toss-up.
That's 10 games. That's a big chunk of the schedule.
Sure.
And we don't know. Maybe Darnold is touchdown Jesus, and he's going to lead the Jets to a win.
Well, the Jets...
here we go.
The Jets play the Patriots tough. I don't think... I think they're going to go 0-2 against them, but it's not like, you know, there haven't been close games when they've been crappy.
And the Bills are a little bit, you know, more legitimate than they have been in past years. They went to the playoffs and scored 3 points.
They have a quarterback that is that's incapable a problem. Of doing anything right.
That's a problem. We don't know what's going to happen with LeSean McCoy. It seems like that situation's kind of disappeared. But
Josh Allen is going to be a massive bust.
They're already saying he is. All right, we'll be back. Mr. Hurley has concocted some sort of game. We will play that in just a moment.
98.5. Toucher and Rich.